This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Today's show is sponsored by Miracle Made. Now, you guys have heard me talk about these sheets before. Guys, they're sheets. They have self-cooling properties for better quality sleep. And they were inspired by NASA. So they have all these like fancy thermoregulating qualities because they're all technology and stuff. And honestly, like, I feel like I spent so much of my life just buying the crappiest sheets. And when you find sheets that feel delightful, that's something you hang on to. You know what I mean? You just hang on to that. I mentioned they're self-cooling. They're also self-cleaning. They prevent up to 99.7% of bacterial growth, leaving them staying cleaner and fresher 3 times longer than the average sheets. I can totally attest to that. Like I said, they're super comfortable. They feel luxurious, like nicer than sheets they use in 5-star hotels. For real. They're designed for your skin. And because of the bacteria thing, it doesn't cause breakouts and stuff, which is like actually a big issue for my husband. His face is very sensitive to that. And I'll tell you, these pillowcases have been doing wonders on his face. So go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation to get Miracle Made sheets today. And whether you're buying them for yourself or as a gift for a loved one, if you order today, you can save over 40%. And if you use the promo code FAKETHENATION at checkout, then you'll receive 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. It's an incredible deal. And Miracle is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. And if you aren't 100% satisfied, you'll get a full refund. So upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/FAKETHENATION and use the code FAKETHENATION to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation. Treat yourself. And thanks so much to Miracle Made for sponsoring this episode.
Fake the Nation, episode 253.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and we take the limp, empty balloon of democracy. We puff it full of air and not with one of those machines. Like, we do it with our mouths, and we watch as the balloon inflates till it reflects the big buoyancy that is America. I am your host, Nagin Farsad, and yes, I've had to inflate a lot of balloons for my toddler, and she has exploded many of them right in my ear. Today, we're going to talk about the new mask mandate-ish situation, unclear what. We'll also talk about inclusive capitalism, garish American tourist Bill Gates, and the shine wearing off of your Golden Globe. Today, I'm so excited for the panel that we have assembled. Joining us again on this show, and I have joined him on his show. It's one of my favorite podcasts out there, folks. He is a co-host of Yo, Is This Racist? He's a comedy writer and just like a generally wonderful person. Folks, it's Andrew T. Hey, Andrew.
What's up? How's it going?
Oh my God, so happy you're here.
Thank you for having me. Wonderful person. We'll see. The listeners can
okay,
decide.
You know what? You're right. I feel like I gave you an impossible standard to live up to. Just so the listeners are clear, he's a fucking garbage
Thank
person.
You.
Just, and that. I think that's a space where I'm more comfortable mm-hmm. with as comedians. Also joining me on the show today, she may also be a garbage person. You know what I mean? She's been on The Tonight Show, on Mad TV. She just ended a stint as a head writer for Little Late with Lily Singh on NBC. She's just utterly delightful, but still garbage. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Chelsea Davison. Hey, Chelsea.
Hi, that is the most accurate intro I've ever gotten, you know? Credits, but still garbage.
But still garbage. We all contain multitudes, and half of those multitudes are really shitty things.
Our resume does not make us less garbage.
True. Folks, before we get into the show, I just want to remind you, I am doing a show in New York City. It is Nagin Farsad presents an evening of comedy from her mouth hole. That would be this mouth hole that I'm now currently speaking out of. It's on June 8th. It's going to be at Caveat here in New York City. It's the first time I am doing an hour since the poop-demic. The last time I did an hour, I was in Iowa City, and it was to 1,000 people. And then after the show, I did a book signing, and I shook hands with or hugged or just straight up made out with probably 700 of those people. It was the most just viral situation you could ever be in. It is a wonder I didn't have COVID, or did I? And was I a super spreader? Possibly. But anyways, this was in February of 2020. And I have not done I've not been responsible for a full hour. I'm just gonna say, I will not be making out with you this time. I will, however, be asking for you to show your proof of vaccine. So get your tickets online. You're gonna have to show your proof of vaccination using the Excelsior Pass or your CDC card. And the Excelsior Pass, by the way, super, super, duper, duper easy for New Yorkers. You just download it and you put in your vaccine date and your name, and then boom, there it is. Your Excelsior Pass is ready to go. So highly recommend that just in general, because there's going to be a bunch of like shows like this around town. And if you are unvaccinated but have a negative COVID test, you could show that as well. So we're trying to make it safe. And I hope you join me. I'm nervous and I'm excited, and who knows what'll happen, and you'll help me figure out what it is that I'm saying in the world. All right, let us get into it with topic number one. So last week, the CDC made a new announcement that basically not only did vaccinated people not need to wear a mask outside, but they did need to wear one inside either. People were elated, angry, relieved, confused. Andrew, can you explain to me just the whirlwind of emotions that America went through with this announcement?
I'm not sure. I feel like I was in a very weird one, because I will say during pandemic, except for three exceptions, which I will not go into, kept it extremely, I would say, on the high end of risk intolerance. So,
okay,
just like
the high end. That's like a double negative. You...
High end over. I basically. Because
you were really into wearing your mask.
Yeah, and partially yeah. Just because I'm, you know, TV writer last year, like on Zoom rooms and stuff. So I was actually able to physically not be around a human being 99% of the time. So wow. I was like super, super, super buttoned up, you know,
yeah.
and probably too much, I would argue, in terms of like actual like risk.
Right.
You know, with whatever attendant psychological potential for damage that comes with. So I have been fully vaccinated. And when I think I missed the actual announcement on Friday, because I was flying on a plane for the first time to Atlanta to see my sister. So I'm in the home of the CDC, and I hope this isn't a violation of her privacy, but she used to work at the CDC also. So I'm not going to say any opinions about that I've heard,
right.
But the fact is, yeah, she used to work there. I don't believe she knows any of the you know, COVID people. She was not on that beat.
Yeah.
Or she may know them. I don't actually know.
What was she at? Was she on like oral gonorrhea, or what was she, what detail was she
and,
on?
And how do you get to choose? Is there like a draft?
And is there a popular one that everyone wants to do? Is it like HPV is like the most popular or something? I'm so curious.
I'm not actually sure all of the details. I will just say, she got her job doing a thing she's very passionate about. I've talked about on Yosis Racist. So, you know, she's a women's health provider and got a job at the CDC thinking it would be under the Hillary Clinton administration. And we'll just say the job was significantly different once she got
here. Sure.
Can I also say, Andrew, if it just speaking from one first generation immigrant kid to another,
yep.
Is she the favored sister? I mean, is she the favored sibling because of these accolades?
I would say there's a yes and no to it, because so the two immigrant things that are at cross purposes are obviously doctor better than comedy writer significantly.
Yeah, yes, however, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, I'm recognizing that.
That hits against the sexism and the firstbornism. pretty strongly. So I think in a pretty fucked up way, I think I'm still probably kind of the favorite, quote unquote, in a way that is deeply
just
unfair.
Please let your sister know that she's my favorite between the two of you. Please.
Also my favorite. Are you kidding?
Is one of you married / have kids? So many of my friends who are first generation people, they're just like, this is all my parents care about is who gives them grandkids first.
She is married, no kids. Again, I hope this
I think she,
by the way, Fake the Nation is now a podcast about Andrew's sister, is what. Okay, before you have to say anything more uncomfortable, Chelsea. Sorry. So, Andrew, your whole point was, what was your whole point?
Oh, my gosh. My whole point was, have since becoming vaccinated and I guess it's one of those things where, like, the innate distrust of the way the CDC was politicized before, and also some of their pretty significant missteps vis-a-vis, like, mask wearing, you know, early pandemic, you know, they seem to have a lot of stuff that comes out that's like, we're doing this for untransparent reasons, and the science may contribute to it, but I don't know. It's just the policy of it. I have a gut distrust of them, and yet, you know, I'm wearing my mask indoors still, but I do kind of feel like, yeah, this is...
Which, by the way, Chelsea, in New York State, most businesses, restaurants, stores, salons, gyms, churches are going to be able to return to 100% capacity, but they still have to maintain 6 feet of distance, which in New York City is like, you know, doesn't necessarily change the capacity. Vaccinated people no longer have to wear a mask indoors or outdoors. Masks will continue to be mandatory on public transit and in schools from pre-K to 12 and homeless shelters, correctional facilities, nursing homes, healthcare settings, and then theaters and large venues still have to do a third capacity unless they do like vaccine only events. So, Chelsea, what was your reaction to all up to that and to the mass stuff from last week?
I feel like I have a lot of mixed reactions to it because, like, on the one hand, I do feel like it's a relief. You know, I'm excited to not have to wear masks all the time, but there is definitely that feeling of nervousness if you can trust it. Also, like, at this point, I've amassed quite a fancy little mask collection, so I'm like, why did I buy all of these? You know,
I mean, we don't want to see if you have some matching. The thing that has been the most impressive to me is when people do matching mask to outfit.
I can't believe it.
I love those people. They have a zest for life that none of us, the rest of us, truly don't understand.
I just, I'm so excited to see, like, you know, a year from now or 2 years, like, are people going to take all their old masks and like make like a little quarantine quilt or like, you know, to commemorate or like what's going to happen with all
actually,
of them?
Actually, that's a great idea. here's some of the complaints that have basically been, one of the like political complaints was that the CDC didn't like, you know, run this by a bunch of governors and state leaders and Joe Biden, right? Like the White House was taken off guard. The CDC came out with this. The thing, so I guess on a just like rolling and how information gets rolled out and it should, you know, and how the entire country, and by the way, when America makes a rule like this, it resonates, it sends ripples throughout the rest of the globe, right? It's like a big deal. So the way that information should be handled, you know, there should be some care put into it, right? And it seemed like it was maybe just like sudden. That said, the CDC, you know, for example, I was just sort of waiting for the outdoor mask guidance to come out, and that which came out a few weeks ago, because we all knew that the chance of getting COVID outdoors without a mask and social distancing or whatever was very, very low. So it just was like, why isn't the CDC admitting the science on this? Like, we all know the science on this. So in some ways, they're both overly cautious and then totally sudden at the same time. You know what I mean?
In general, I feel like the rollout with everything has just been pretty confusing. Obviously, I'm impressed with, like, the speed. And I do think, like, it's amazing that so many people have gotten vaccinated. But I do just think about, like, so many people I know, it's like, scrambling to try to get a vaccine. It wasn't clear, like, what are the, like, channels. Like, I got my second vaccine in the laundry aisle of a CVS and then kept being like, was that legit? Was that a real vaccine? Like, it's just so, like...
And what's weird is that it was the super from my building who was administering the vaccine.
They just had, like, folding chairs looking at Tide Pods. I was so confused.
But that's funny because it's also the amazing thing about the rollout is that it started out with these, these kind of super centers. What were we calling those? Super centers? I don't know. Whatever. Those super vaccination. I've already forgotten what they were called, and they ended like 2 weeks ago. But anyways, we had these huge stadiums and stuff like that, and people kind of figured that out. But then what really started to happen after we reached the kind of like 40-50% mark was like, oh, we actually need to go to places where people are, make this easier. So it's like your laundry aisle is the easiest place in America. You know what I mean?
No,
and that's
great.
Amazing that they figured that out. And the rollout of that was, it's also, I mean, on a logistical front, this whole thing has been pretty fucking remarkable.
Yeah. It just feels like at times it's like this big official thing and it feels like, you know, there's so much around it. And so that's why some of the messaging, you're like, oh, it's the official CDC guideline. And then at the other, like half the time, they're just like, yeah, you can get vaccinated in the laundry aisle. By the way, masks, you don't need them. It's fine. Like, you know what I mean? It's this alternating between casual and super strict.
Yeah. Right. Well, and you know, and it's funny because even just today when I was out, I ran into a neighbor and we walked by the supermarket, this little market. I don't know. Doesn't matter. But it was small. It wasn't super. And she was like, oh, I don't know if I have to wear my mask in there now. And, you know, it was like the other thing about it is like it's today in New York State, a bunch of changes, you know, last week in Illinois or wherever, you know, it's like there's things that are happening constantly. And because of our patchwork of states and their like separate little rules, it can be very confusing. But also, we're not fucking dum-dums. I feel like we can figure it out. I mean, it's like, it's confusing, but it's not that confusing. By the way, major retailers like Costco, Target, CVS, Trader Joe's have said that they're not, that they're going to end mask requirements for vaccinated patrons and subject to local guidelines. In Texas, they said that you can't even have a mask requirement. What do you think about that? Like a place that can't have a mask requirement, Andrew?
I mean, it's, you know, we
I feel like your sigh said a lot right there.
We saw the last year what the value of government is, right? It's like there are things that need to be accomplished from a public health perspective that can only be accomplished by government, sort of like it or not. And the fact that, like, you know, you see, we'll call them small government people, whoever they might be, really just it's anathema to them to use the government to do anything good, evidently, because I'm just like, look, the ability to have a mask mandate seems important. That's the way most of the like countries that got COVID under control pre-vaccine were able to do it. And I don't know, it's just if people can't be, haven't, you know, internalized that there's some shit that government just has to be able to do. It's just never going to happen.
The thing that confuses me is just, you know, some of these places, it's like you can have like no shirt, no shoes, no service. But it's not like seeing someone's like nipples is going to like cause you actual disease. But like not wearing a mask actually could. So it's like it seems like it should.
Hold
still
on.
Be the
I
same
have
thing.
A story about a nipple I saw back in 72. But no, you're right. You're right. Your point is well taken. Like, why would you have that requirement?
Right. And it is awfully rich, of course, that a conservative government is preventing a private business from enacting whatever fucking rules they want.
It's fun. I mean, it's a fun Texas. Compartmentalization is how that happens. But I also want to just point out, the other thing that's weird is the rules around children. Children still need to be masked in a lot of situations because they're between, you know, 0 and 12, you can't get vaccinated yet. And so I feel like that's like been confusing for parents. Like, what do they do? But I think, I guess my question for you guys is, the population of people, so right now, assuming, you know, if you're vaccinated, you got basically don't have anything to worry about, because even me as a parent, I'm vaccinated, and according to the science, I'm it's extremely, extremely, extremely unlikely that I would pass on anything to my child. So then I'm not terribly worried about my interaction with her. I guess my question is, how much responsibility do you feel to people who are unvaccinated by choice? Like, about protecting them. Chelsea, do you feel a responsibility?
I mean, yes and no. So my family is in Ohio, and like, you can read between the lines there. it's been a struggle.
Some of my best friends are from Ohio, so I don't know what you mean.
Like, you know, my parents both got vaccinated, but like, my older brother, who's 20 years older, so he's in his 50s, you know, he should get vaccinated. He decided not to. And he recently got COVID, and, you know, he wasn't hospitalized, but like, it was really bad. He was really sick for 3 weeks. And it is this type of thing where, obviously, I love my brother. I'm glad he didn't die. But there is this, like, I hate that it makes me feel this like tinge of schadenfreude where I'm like, good. This so shows you not to believe right. stuff, and like, just get right. vaccinated. Like, what you're, I don't know, all the stuff
is
that
is he going to get vaccinated now?
No, now he says he doesn't need to because he already got it. So he's good now. He's protected.
For the record, though, for people who think that the antibodies deteriorate faster if you had COVID and expect for that to act like a vaccine, so the vaccine is still more effective for the record.
Yes. That I think he actually may get vaccinated now is because Ohio is holding that $1 million a raffle, basically drawings
yes!
for people who are getting vaccinated,
and there's so much fun stuff you could get.
It's so silly because you hear that and you're like, who was not going to get vaccinated? And it's like my family, like a yeah. bunch right. of them are only getting vaccinated because it's
a
lottery.
I was chatting with someone today who was saying that he wasn't going to get vaccinated because he was like, I've been healthy, I don't need it, right? Which is also it's like, the vaccine isn't about you, it's about yeah. how you could pass it on to others. So anyways, but he was like, but then I realized that they were opening up certain things to people with vaccines, like going to shows, and I really want to go to shows, and so I got vaccinated, and I was like, good. Like, oh, whatever God. Whatever you need to get going. And in, by the way, in Illinois, I think they're handing out like 50,000 tickets to like Six Flags Magic Mountain or something, or what of their local theme parks, I can't remember which one. And in New York, they're handing out free French fries at Shake Shack, they're also handing out free week-long subway cards at certain subway stations throughout the city. So I mean, there's incentives, and
I think it's good. I know it sounds stupid. It's like public health should be enough.
Yeah. I think it's awesome.
It's just there's so many people who it's like they're not convinced, or they're just, you know, they're lazy or they're busy or whatever. There's a million things. They're just afraid. And like, I don't know, free fries, I guess, are enough. And I love that.
It's so wild because it's like, what? I am a little sad that these people's convictions is actually that cheap. Like, because it's like, okay, I get it. I mean, I don't get it. But like, if you have a strong conviction that you're being tracked, or this may cause disease, or, you know, the health industrial right. democratic process is, you know, conspiring against you specifically,
right.
then fuck it, whatever. Like, if you believe that, how could that possibly be counterbalanced by fries, or like a one in, you know, like $5 right. worth of equity towards $1 million shot? Like, it's crazy.
Well, I think it's like the kind of person I talked to today. He wasn't like, I don't believe in the science
right.
or da 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 da. He was just like, I mean, I'm healthy, I just don't need it. Like, that was his. He was just he wasn't so ideologically driven. I think the people who are so ideologically driven are a much smaller percentage,
right.
and they're not motivated by Magic Mountain, right?
Right.
But the rest of the people are sort of like this dude that are like, I mean, I don't really need it, guys. I didn't get COVID. Like, like, it's fine. Like, my life is fine, you know? And those people may be motivated by French fries. And to that, I say, thank you, states and municipalities, for arranging these free treats. Go get them. You know what I mean? Final thoughts on this, Chelsea?
No, I think it's good. Ultimately, I'm glad that things are opening back up. Mask stuff is, you know, it feels like we're finally getting back to normal, which is, you know, as good and bad as normal was. It'd be great if there were a little bit more clarity, I think, just with
right,
the messaging.
Right. And yeah, I agree. I wish there was a little bit more clarity, but I also just want to say, like all of us in the world, no one had dealt with a pandemic like this for 100 years. So it's like the notes on the last pandemic were just like dusty, and who knew? You know what I mean? Who knew what to do? No one.
But also, they're identical for this one. That's the craziest part. I was just like, oh my God, the best practices are identical from the 1918 or whatever. It was just like, this is crazy.
I mean, yeah, they're identical with like with more Netflix or something.
Oh my God.
By the way, I don't know if they're like identical because airborne nature of the whatever, aerosol spray count, whatever, was maybe different or something.
They were it was like stay home.
But yeah, there's a lot of similarities. But all right. You know what, folks? Let me know what you think. Are you going to be out there fucking flaunting your mouth or what? By the way, mouths, right? It's just like we haven't seen very many. And let me know what you think. And in the meantime, we're going to take a quick break to learn about our sponsors, whom we love because they keep the lights on here at Fake the Nation. And then when we come back, we'll talk about other things. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money. And because I used Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry. Thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you. So you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a like a roundabout 8 exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. And we are back, and we're ready for topic number 2. Lynn Forster de Rothschild is a self-made millionaire who later married someone from a banking dynasty, hence her last name of Rothschild. She has a lot of taxes she could pay on her fortune. Guess what? She wants to pay them. She founded something called the Coalition for Inclusive Capitalism and later the Council for Inclusive Capitalism. And there was a profile about her in the New York Times. And so it made me think, like, first of all, let's talk about inclusive capitalism. What is it? Chelsea, do you have an idea what it is?
Yeah. So basically, the idea that she's trying to say is that like capitalism can try to benefit more people because currently it's out of control, and you know it's hurting. It's only helping the rich get richer and leaving everyone else behind. But this irked me so much, this profile and the things she had to say, because I mean, okay.
What upset you about this profile?
Okay, so many things. Okay, first of all, the idea of inclusive capitalism from a member of the Rothschild family and the Pope. It's a freaking, you know, collab between two people who live in literal palaces. You know, this isn't like ivory tower theory. These are people whose summer homes are literal ivory towers. It's crazy. And then the whole thing in this article is her going on about how she thinks that billionaires are going to eventually have this ethical reawakening. You know, she kept saying like, I want things to, politics and capitalism need to return to a basic sense of decency. And it's like, you think they're going to have an ethical reawakening? The people you're talking about went to child sex island. Like, they're not going to suddenly be like, morals. Like, it just seems so out of touch. I could not believe it. So wishful thinking.
Andrew, what did you think?
I would say I largely agree with that. I mean, the thing that really, like, it's weird that she's making sort of this like ethical argument when I don't understand why, if you're a billionaire to the other billionaire peers, it's like, look, there's simply a fee to stave off the guillotine. And honestly, it's not that high as a percentage of what we make. So like, I just like, we are on the road to, you know, guillotine town, like, and really they have a choice. They have a chance to, you know, slow that train down. They should just, it's so weird that they need these like extra 3% of like billions and billions of dollars.
I love that. Just the neck tax. It's to keep your neck.
Yeah. And why not? Like, it's actually a more fun society when that shit is like, you know, when you don't have to wonder like that
stuff.
Well,
and for people, so, okay, I'm just gonna play defense on Lynn Forster de Rothschild for just a moment with all four of her names. What I think part of what people like her are doing, and I don't mean to suggest that she invented inclusive capitalism or whatever the idea. By the way, for the people who might not understand what is exclusive about capitalism, think of, like, for example, redlining, like the U.S. housing policy that was huge in the 1930s that prevented, like, you know, black people from buying, from getting mortgages in certain neighborhoods. Like, that's a way in which we weren't doing, like, free market capitalism because not everybody was free to partake in the capitalism, right? So we haven't actually been living in what anyone would consider some sort of idealistic free market capitalism because it has at various times and continuously and in various ways, some obvious and some more subtle, has kept people out of it, right? So we don't even know what it's like, what real capitalism is like, which I think is what's really fucking mind-blowing, right? When you think about it, we don't even really know what real capitalism is like. And so inclusive capitalism is a little bit just like in capitalism that doesn't exclude people, like it's so simple. But in her particular thing, it's also an effort to get businesses more engaged in environmental and social issues, and to pay. Basically, she says in this piece, I personally am fine with higher taxes if higher taxes lead to better distribution of opportunity. That basically she wants shareholders to think about social implications, like what is my money doing for the good of society? Is there a good of society at all to my money? And I think that all of that stuff is noble. And what I think is important about someone like her, with her foreign names, with her, with the mayor, I was like, oh my God, if you're that rich, marry someone poor so it spreads around a little bit. But no, she married a rich person. So then they had even more money together, because she's a self-made millionaire. What I think is important about someone like her coming out with stuff like this and working with people like the Pope is that other billionaires need to see people like her to buy in. You know what I mean?
Modeling good behavior.
It's like what I do with my toddler. I don't eat a bunch of chocolate and pizza in front of her because I don't want her to eat a bunch of chocolate and pizza. But I do it when she goes to sleep, folks. My point is I'm trying to model good behavior. And I think that's what someone like her can do. She can be like, listen, billionaire, I get it. I know what it's like to be a billionaire. I know what it's like to not like taxes. But I'm telling you right now, you're not even gonna feel it.
But this is
what good it could do.
It feels like this idea of these like benevolent billionaires, and like there's always been these role models. There have been these people like Warren Buffett who say they're gonna give it away. There have been philanthropists like Bill Gates who we'll talk about. There have always been these quote unquote good billionaires. And the thing we've found out time and time again is like most of them are not that good. And so I do feel like her just being like, come on, guys, shouldn't we care a little bit? It feels, I don't think that will actually do anything. I mean, maybe that's, it's obviously her heart's in the right place. I think it's great for her to care when so many don't. But, you know, the things she's talking about are like, hey, we should tax companies that cause negative social harm. But it's like she's ignoring all the things of like, why don't politicians tax the companies that cause social harms? Because they give them money to get reelected. So you would have to address.
Right. And I wouldn't be surprised if she was out there saying we should, you know, let's get rid of Citizens United. You know what I mean? That may also be a part of her platform.
In
that profile she did, she talked about exactly what you're saying, Chelsea, that we should penalize companies that pay their workers such a low wage that those workers then have to be on public assistance in order to lead a decent life or just a minimum survival.
Yeah.
And that's great. We don't penalize these companies ever for anything, and they don't even ever really pay taxes. So like, let's start with some of these ideas. Like, I think that is a great idea.
Yeah, I think if we can actually penalize that, it was just that she's like, yeah, it just seems really, you know, we shouldn't, Jeff Bezos is a great guy, but, you know, he shouldn't have billions when thousands of his workers are in public assistance. And I really hope that he like does the right thing. You know what I mean? It's that thing of like expecting Jeff Bezos that like that change will ever come from him. And I think that is where I'm like, lady, well, and, sweet, and, sweet and, lady.
I want to talk a little bit about, and you know, I've mentioned this before, but like the thing about that I've, you know, that's maybe possible is the way that we perceive capitalism is that it's always about growth. And that's kind of the way, maybe, and this is also a very American way, is like mm-hmm. when we ask someone how you doing or whatever, and this is also very entertainment industry, you kind of want to know, like, I assume you're working on 12 additional new projects that I haven't heard of before. What are the many, many new things that you're doing? How is your growth? What is your personal growth? You know what I mean? Like, that's just like such an American thing that people can't just be like, you know, hey, I did a bunch of gardening this weekend and I watched my kid play in a pool and that's great. Like, it's like we expect people to have stories of incredible additional growth. And that's kind of, you know, we view that with capitalism. We talk about that with the GDP. Like, I've always been like, why do we care about the fucking GDP? Like, why do we even talk about that? You know, why do we talk about growth so much? Like, growth is not environmentally sustainable. Do you think it's possible to like somehow start de-emphasizing, and do you think maybe Gen Z, or have you heard murmurings of us trying to get rid of growth as a metric by which we define all success?
That feels like impossible. It feels so baked into like America, but it is like, and this is not a phrase I came up with, but I don't know who actually said it first, was like, unchecked, unregulated growth is like what a cancer is. That's a tumor. Like, that is like literally what is happening in the human body. Yeah. And it's sort of what we're seeing. It's like growth for no reason. Growth for no reason, which is what Wall Street seems to require from companies. It's like just question mark, who knows? Like there's no reason it has to be like this. You could be profitable at the same rate every year and be considered a failure.
And be cool. Yeah, right.
Well, yeah.
Like, it's crazy to me that a huge company could be profitable at the same rate every year and that's not enough, you know? At that, and instead of like being like, hey guys, well done. No dips. You know what I mean? Like, you're still making a shit ton. Well done. Like, why, Chelsea, do you think we could be, there's room for some kind of cultural sea change on growth?
I mean, I would love that. I also have been confused, especially it's confused me with apps and social media and things like that, because it'll be like, wow, you know, they've continued to add to their user base and now they're up to, you know, a billion people. And I'm like, at a certain point, there's only so many people. There's only so many people. There's only so many computers. There's only, you know what I mean? And I'm like, what happens when you get everyone? Is then the company considered unsuccessful? Like, that's where I don't understand. But I don't know. I think in general, my view of this with capitalism is that, you know, all these things we talk about, like, well, you know, we haven't seen like real capitalism. And I guess my take on that is that this is real capitalism. The other version of it is ideal. It's capitalism in theory. I feel like there's a lot of cool, like, hippie high school students who's like, well, communism's actually great. You know, in theory, communism works. It's just in reality, it doesn't.
I was one of those people in high school saying exactly that.
The same thing is true with capitalism, where, like, yes, capitalism in theory is a beautiful thing, where people have all these opportunities and can climb up by their bootstraps, and it's a free market, and that. But that's not real life, in the same way that, like, there's always corruption, there's always favors, there's always, you know, the human nature. Nothing is perfect in the real world. And so I think, like, what we have is what it is. I don't know. I'm not sure how to fix it.
It's funny that we're also unwilling to accept that something is just theory. Like, unicorns in theory are great. They shit rainbows and they're so beautiful. But guess what? In reality, they don't exist. Like, why can't we admit to ourselves that, like, it might not exist, right? It's just weird to me.
Well, also,
folks,
like,
let me know. Oh, yeah.
I was just going to say, like, given that we, for instance, are in a nation, if capital can be passed down and capital is the basis for capitalism to work, and we have in our nation, like, stolen capital, stolen people's labor, a whole race of people in America's case. How it's so weird, like, to actually get to theoretical perfect capitalism, we would have to do one massive act of socialism, take everyone's money, divide it up, give it to everyone equally, and then see who has what opportunities. That's still not fair. There's still going to be people that went to, you know, Yale or whatever, but like, that would actually be okay. We do have, let's have a level playing field and see what happens if you really want to go there.
Yeah, let's see. Andrew challenges you. Let's have a level playing field. Let's see what happens. Folks, let me know what you think, especially if you're entrepreneurs out there. Like, are you like super, super tied to growth? Like, if you're running a business, how much does growth matter to you? I'm so curious. Let me know. Kindly people of Fake the Nation who have probably thought about this a ton more than I have, because they actually really are so thoughtful. Let us move on to topic number three. So we're going to dip into a little cultural grab bag. We've been doing that because Julia Linden, our fearless producer, just comes up with such like fantastic small bite things to talk about each week. And so today, let us talk about, first up, remember when Americans were on a list of do not enter because we were riddled with coronavirus and we had a shitty president, which was kind of like subtextual, not in the actual lists. Well, now Europe is like, oh my God, we totally miss you guys. Americans, please come back. Please be garish and terrible with your visors. We miss you. So my question is, what was the American reputation abroad? What defined that? Chelsea?
I mean, you know, there's the stereotype, which, I mean, of course, is based in some truth, where, like, you've gone to museums abroad and you see people who are dressed like it's Disney World in the Louvre and, you know, trying to take selfies with the art that they're not supposed to get near. You know what I mean? It's a lot of that. But I don't know. I think a lot of it is I don't know, not unfair, because I do think a lot of it is like founded. But like, I remember I went to Austria. I went to Salzburg when I was in eighth grade. And like, this Austrian full-grown adult came up and screamed in my face about Bush. So I'm like, I think there are assholes everywhere. There's annoying people everywhere.
Yeah,
and
there are assholes
also
everywhere.
I'm like, you guys think we're dumb. This man thought a 12-year-old was old enough to vote, and you thought Bush was the worst we could do. Like, you know what, Europeans, you're not always smarter than us.
Andrew, what do you think?
I guess to me, this feels slightly not like a nothing story, but I'm like, yeah, it just felt like the deal was, Americans are, you know, the grossest cultural imperialists, fine. But we also bring American dollars, fine. And the deal is, we take your, you know, if you're a European country, you take the dollars, and one thing you get in exchange is sneered at. And like, I don't know, that just feels like that's always been the math.
Right, right. That's the trade-off. Yeah. I just want to say, for just to get some numbers in there, the European Travel Commission said that the European Union received 30 million American visitors in 2019, and that's more tourists than from China, Canada, and Australia combined. So I was actually really stunned to hear that. But that's how big we are in travel terms and in dollar terms going to Europe. And I think, you know, like, we adopted, I just have to say something about myself. I just have to be really honest with you guys that I have worn a sensible shoe abroad and I have worn a visor. And I'm so sorry. It's just, when the sun penetrates your face at a certain angle, the visor really helps. And I know it's horrendous. I know. And I'm just like, the only reason I'm doing this is no one will see me. No one knows me here. I'm not going to run into an ex with me wearing a fucking visor. But, and I've done it in New York City a couple times. I don't want to talk about it. It's just too much shame. But point is, I do see that in other countries. I do wish we could go back to a time where everyone just put on a three-piece suit to go, like, you know, look at the Mona Lisa. Those were beautiful times. But I think the other thing about American tourists is that, like, they are loud. They're sort of like into it, though, right? It's like a joyful largesse and a joyful buoyancy and loudness that's like, that's okay. You know what I mean? And the part of me is just like in defense of America and our ability to fucking have a good time out there. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's dumb. Also just say, some of the other countries you mentioned, I mean, it's just like any time you get a significant class of people able to travel, they are moneyed, they are privileged, you know, and that's those are the people that sort of suck in every culture. I mean, my memory, I was in China, I was in Beijing at Tiananmen Square, and like just watching two Australian shirtless bros throw a rugby ball back and forth on this, like, you know, pretty intense sight. I was like, yeah, it's just, you know, because they're on vacay.
Right. And, right.
And then like Chinese tourists in America, you're like, okay, I thankfully understand that not all Chinese people are dicks, but many Chinese people who can afford to come to America are dicks. And that's yeah. It's just a self-selecting population.
All right, let's move on to the Golden Globes. So the Golden Globes has had a rough 2021 so far. There was an LA Times expose. Time Up made recommendations for reform that kind of came out of that expose. Tom Cruise returned his three Golden Globes as a protest. And then the Golden Globes actually announced that they were going to make some changes, but the NBC decided to cancel its broadcast anyway. Because it looked like those changes weren't going to roll out until at least 2023. So what do you think? I mean, part of me is just like, does it matter? Chelsea, what do you think?
I am a big believer in award shows in general. They
why?
I think they matter because people believe they matter. Like, to me, they matter, and that's what gives them power. Like, I cry every year at the Oscars because I love movies and I love that stuff. And like, yes, they're very self-congratulatory and a lot of it's bought by publicists. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I know that it's not truly a metric of what is the best art, but I think it's such a magical way to celebrate things. And so I do think I think it's important that they're trying to make these changes. But also I am a little sad. It's both.
Yeah,
but I just, so many of the things, like, it does, I think, often spotlight, you know, not important movie, but like movies that are exciting and like performances that are great. And it also, even when like stupid stuff like Green Book wins, it at least gets us talking about stuff.
It directs the conversation.
There's so many movies like Parasite that I would never have gone out of my way to see because to be honest, it looked too scary. But then once it gets nominated for a bunch of stuff, I'm like, all right, I guess I have to buckle up and see this movie that scares me. And then it was so great. And so I think that's the thing where, like, I don't know. I think award shows have this inherent worth because of what people give it.
And what I love about what you said, Chelsea, is that, like, it's okay. You can know that the Oscars are being self-congratulatory or that there's just too much net worth in that room for it to be normal or whatever. But also to just be like, I'm upholding I'm celebrating the artifice that is this ridiculous thing because it's kind of fun. Like, it's okay for us to just have fun. And part of me just feels like we sort of, you know, forget that that it's okay also for these things to be fun. I'm not saying the Golden Globes shouldn't be fucking shit on or whatever, but I'm just saying, like, it's also okay to think, like, for example, that the Oscars are great and fun and that you cry and all. You just buy into it. It is entertainment. Andrew, what do you think?
I guess as someone who's, we talked about this a little bit before we started recording, on very much on the record being very much against every Hollywood gatekeeper. You know, I kind of, this is probably like a theory practice thing, which is like theory of the Oscars, of any award show, great. In practice, it's just like, you know, because of the history and because of the way people vote and because of like who has access to creating movies and TV, like it will simply just, in my eye, be a self-perpetuating kind of thing unless radical, massive changes are made. You know, Oscars kind of did something. And I guess there's an element of the Golden Globes, and this sort of is tying in all of the things we've talked about today, like of the establishment just throwing the like most evidently problematic one under the bus so that they don't have to do as much to fix the also problematic, more, you know,
other legitimate ones.
Seeming ones. Yeah. They're just like,
right.
Golden Globes. We know, like, there's also a thing where it's like such common knowledge in the entertainment industry that the Golden Globes is literally bought and sold, like not simply.
Yeah.
Like, you know, oh, we threw a nice party for all the Oscar voters and whoever, you know, those campaigns are expensive. It's much more like, no, they asked for like a Tesla or whatever for like all these voters and whoever, you know, or whatever high end thing that they have been giving to this small cadre.
That would be fucking crazy if there was just like dozens of Teslas that were being sent out to foreign journalists. I think part of me, Andrew, I don't know. Okay. Like, And you, Chelsea, like, as a woman, right? For me, part of it is, even though I'm like, yeah, we should hold these people accountable and fuck the gatekeepers or whatever, but also as like a Muslim lady POC in the entertainment business, I'm like, please let me in. I want to get that credit behind my name. You know what I mean? It's like, you've never wanted me there, but I'm desperate to join your ranks, even though I think your gatekeeperhood sucks.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a tortured relationship because it's like, oh, I would gladly accept an award from you. You know what I mean?
Well,
it's like, but also reform yourselves. You know, I mean, it's like such a tortured relationship for me.
If I may give you your cake and allow you to eat it as well.
Yeah, please.
I think that is the nature, all of us on this show as some sort of not straight white man. the nature of us being, you know, for instance, you know, winning an award is like a knock against the gatekeeping. It does change who gets to keep the gate if we get to vote in subsequent awards, and as opposed to, you know, just another straight white guy winning an award. I think they are two different things. Is this wildly self-serving a theory? Absolutely. Would I take an Emmy in a heartbeat or even a Golden Globe? Yes, but
100%,
still.
Yeah. All right, let us move on to our next cultural touchpoint this week. It is Bill Gates. He's been in a flurry of articles because him and Melinda Gates got a divorce. It was a very public divorce. And now there's like some stories coming out about how he wasn't like the best ever person. and Chelsea, I don't know. It's interesting. Part of me is like, why? I mean, is it surprising? Like, what does it matter specifically? Like, what do you think?
I mean, you know, you can refer to my earlier statements about child sex island. I mean, I just think that it is naive anytime we expect these people with so much money. The only way to amass that sort of wealth, I think, is to be kind of a bad person. And I think that is not a judgment about a specific person. That's just that's the type of person. I think to be in the entertainment industry, you have to be a little bit of a narcissist. And I'm like, that's fine. That's something I recognize in myself and all my friends, and great. But I do think, like, yeah, to be a billionaire, you have to be immoral. And so it's not shocking then when, you know, this like immoral dragon also does immoral things in his personal life, potentially. Obviously,
we don't know, but some of them were basically that he, pursued a bunch of women who worked at Microsoft or the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, unwanted advances. So those are some of the allegations, but also that he hung out a bunch with Jeffrey Epstein. Again, like the nature of them hanging out is, you know, it's not like, and I don't think people are even suggesting necessarily that he had anything to do with his, sex trafficking ring or whatever, but that they did hang out in a sort of like dudes with money kind of way, or I don't know. And they were friends. The reporting on this is a little bit unclear, but
he went to Epstein's house all the time, and having now
after he was a known sex offender.
Right. And now that we have learned all this stuff about what went down at Epstein's house, it's not like, even if he's not actually going on this plane to an island, it's like, we know a lot of the sex trafficking happened at the house. So it just, it seems, I'm obviously I'm not accusing him of whatever, yeah. but I'm just saying that there's a lot of things that I'm just like, this, to even if I found out someone I knew, I'm like, oh, this person's a great comedian. Oh, wait, they were convicted of having sex with minors and child, like, sex trafficking. I don't think I would still hang out with them. You know,
Feel like that's fucked up. Right. Like, right. after he's already been, you know, imprisoned, quote unquote, because he actually got to leave prison every day, which is fucking crazy. But Andrew, I guess here's something weird about Bill Gates' particular persona publicly is that, A, he was almost, and this is just like, I think, all about marketing, right? In the way that he was mm-hmm. pitched and the way that he was handled by his own media handlers and publicists or whatever. They crafted a vision of him that was all about being a smart guy who was almost like asexual. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, part of the Bill Gates phenomenon is that he was just this guy that did this thing with Microsoft. It really took off. He became extremely rich. And then he decided to do some really, really good work with his wealth. And all the while, he's basically asexual. You know what I mean? It's like, that's kind of the image that was crafted. So I think part of that is what's kind of falling apart right now. What do you think?
Yeah, it is this thing where it's like, why did you need to have that image? And like, I mean, I guess it is evidently likely to be some sort of denial or cover up, maybe. Like, I don't, you know, depending on how intentional or what the point of it was. It is also this thing where you're like, just, yeah. I mean, I guess it is like the power creates this type of person. It feels like inevitable, like it's utterly unsurprising to me. And I'm like, yeah, because if you're a billionaire, you it seems like you just have to act like that. And I don't know if it's human nature or just, you know, right. a self-selecting population, you only get there by being that person. I don't know.
I know a couple of people here and there who have sold companies for like lots of money. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I do think that the sudden infusion of money in their lives does like change them, you mm-hmm. know? It mm-hmm. like they have to do a lot of work mm-hmm. in order to retain their like their former selves. And again, this is just purely anecdotal. I don't fucking know, but like just in a couple of situations that I've seen, I was just like, "Oh, this money has changed you." You know what I mean?
Sure.
And it's weird. But, you know, Chelsea, yeah. Like, final thoughts. Billionaires can't be nice people. Or we shouldn't even. Or should we just not even. Should we just stop fucking talking about what kind of people billionaires are?
I think we should just assume that they are. They are not evil. I saw, this is me quoting a meme, I'm sorry, but it's basically a thing about how Smaug the dragon from, you know, The Hobbit, you know, would have all these like billions and billions, and about how like people like Jeff Bezos have so much more money than Smaug the dragon, who sits in a literal mountain of gold. And I was just thinking, you know, from that, I don't know, it made me laugh, this meme. And I thought about it and I was like, that type of like amoral dragon guarding their wealth is how we should really view all of these people. It's like, there can be a good dragon who doesn't attack the countryside, or maybe even sometimes drops a little gold for the people in the village and they say, oh, what a nice dragon. And then, you know, there's mean dragons who eat children and, you know, burn down the village. Like, there's both. But, like, either way, it's a very amoral thing, because you are inherently hoarding resources, and mm-hmm. even the dragon that is helping is still a fucking dragon. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was still, I don't know. But also with Bill Gates, you know, I'm so sad for those publicists who worked for so long and hard and only to see their good work going down the drain. Guys, I'm so sorry.
It was a really carefully crafted, you know, art project.
They did
project
so much good
really
work
did.
And
did
he threw it
work.
All away, and I'm so sorry.
All right. That is the end of the show. Oh my God, thank you so much for joining us. But what I really want is for the people of Faith the Nation to be able to follow all of the amazing stuff that you do. Chelsea, where do they do that?
Oh, they can do that on Twitter at Chelsea_Davison. Also, I'm doing a play reading in New York on June 28th at 2 p.m. at the Asylum Theater. So come to that. I wrote it and I'm acting in it. Come see
that's
it.
So exciting. An in-person situation.
Can you even imagine an in-person thing?
I mean, I am imagining the theater. It's back.
Maybe?
It's so exciting. June 8th, my show, and then June 28th, your show, and then in that you're getting a double dose of Fake the Nation people in one month. Andrew, where do they follow you?
Oh my gosh, I'm just Andrew T. Last name is spelled T-I. Everywhere. I mean, not TikTok, but whatever. and also, my podcast, Yo, Is This Racist, a co-host with Tawny Newsom. We have not so recently anymore gone independent. So if you like this, come listen to us. There's a free show, Yo, Is This Racist, and then suboptimalpods.com. We have a bunch of very bonkers premium content that I am very proud of. It's real crazy.
It's amazing additional content, and you folks should absolutely be subscribing to and supporting Yo, Is This Racist. Folks, I want to really thank... by the way, I'm going to be on Wait, Don't Tell Me this weekend, so tune in for that. And I have a new... I don't remember if I mentioned this last week, but I have a new column up in the Progressive Magazine about the glories of in-person shopping and in-person everything. So please check that out in the Progressive Magazine. I'll be tweeting it out as well. Again, my show is June 8th at Caveat in New York City. Yay. Tickets are available. So please come out to that. And you'll just need to show your CDC card or your Excelsior pass for your proof of vaccination or proof of a negative test. But what I really would like to do is thank the people here at Faith the Nation who make this show possible. That's our producer, Julia Linden, our sound engineer, Stephanie Aguilar, all the wonderful people at HeadGum. Our theme music is written by Gabi Alter. And as always, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts because it helps people find the show, believe it or not, and email us at fakethenation@headgum.com with guest ideas, segment ideas, whatever ideas. And join the Patreon for bonus content. It's patreon.com/NagineFarsad. And thank you so much to everyone at Fake the Nation who's already been a Patreon supporter. I really, really cherish that, and I appreciate you so much. We'll be back in your earballs next week. We'll